Welcome to Political Coffee, your one-hour thought-provoking news and commentary as you begin your day. And now, here's your host, Jeff Kropp.
All righty, friends. Great to be with you today as we begin a new broadcast week on Political Coffee. So, it might be not as bad as everybody thought it was going to be. No kidding. There's evidence that the coronavirus stuff is actually diminishing in Oregon. Now, this is even in the face of Trump giving Oregon a disaster declaration. But did that satisfy Kate? No. Because she's still moaning about how she hasn't gotten enough or isn't getting enough from the federal government. But why is it the federal government's job? Why is it Trump's job to do what she should have done, rather than spend all this money on illegal alien abortions, rather than spend all this money on a just canceled Olympic trials? Because they are going to be canceled, folks, because the Olympics were just moved for a year later, July of 2021. That $40 million. Now, of course, the legislature is coming in to figure out how much more money they need to give to this crisis. What do you think the priorities will be? Are they going to give up that $10 million of illegal aliens, women getting abortions? Speaking of that, there is an interesting email I've got from that state employee whom shall never be known. And it really is just talking about how the number, the 13 deaths that we have had in Oregon, right, from coronavirus. But yet, I mean, this is of the 500 people that have been infected, we've had 13 die. But in just Marion and Polk counties alone, each week, 10 innocent unborn babies are murdered. They're aborted. Now, he concludes with his email: the coronavirus and its devastating effects have caused a great global health, economic, and social crisis never before seen. But the suffering and the loss of life does not compare to the number of unborn innocent children whose lives are ended through abortions in the United States and worldwide. So which is the greater crisis? That's an excellent point. The difference, of course, being that the left doesn't acknowledge that these unborn children in the womb are viable human beings. Therefore, they shouldn't be considered on the same level as human beings who contract coronavirus or the flu or anything else. But it got me to thinking. There's going to be a lot of interesting cultural and certainly economic lifestyle changes that are going to come out of this experience. Some of it, I think, is going to be very positive. Some of it, not so. But let me ask you this. What if this coronavirus business leads to an increase in the reduction of abortion? Why? Because people are talking about life in ways not seen before in this country in a long time. Got a president talking about it every day. I watched him yesterday. I watched that CNN reporter try to catch him with a gotcha question, and he just whacked him. It was fun to watch. Because you know what they do? They take a little bit of what the president said on an interview on Sean Hannity's show, and they just focus on that rather than the entire meaning. That's why I don't care whether you're listening to a politician or, frankly, you're reading the Bible. Don't take just a small piece of anything without considering the context of it all, including the things that I say on this radio show. Freedom Foundation has called for a way of pumping $29 million in just 3 months back into our economy. And you know what it is? Well, Jason Dudash, who's the Freedom Foundation director for Oregon, is going to tell us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have an interview with him. $29 million, folks. Plus, there's some other very interesting news about some things that the Freedom Foundation is doing. We're going to have a later conversation with him about that, but we're going to give you a little hint of that also in this interview at the bottom of the hour. Hey, did you know you can pump your gas now? Yep, you can pump your gas. Oh, hallelujah. Do you really want to do that, though? I mean, think about it. You really want to pump your gas? Look, I have pumped my own gas for years because I'm a farmer and I've had card lock cards and, you know, I do that kind of thing. I'm also a pilot and airplane owner, and I don't have to pump my own gas, but I tend to go places and land at airports like I did just recently when I flew up to Pasco last weekend, or two weekends ago, for my grandson's birthday. I purposefully chose an airport that had self-service gas. Why? Because it's cheaper. So would it be cheaper in Oregon if we made self-service gas permanent? Or would that just embolden Kate and the regressive totalitarian Marxists to again try to ram their agenda, their cost of living increasing agenda down our throats by instituting cap and trade and even greater restrictions like she says she's going to do unconstitutionally with her executive orders? Does it make it easier for her to raise our cost of living with the price of gas? If the price of gas is coming down, because the legislature might make permanent pumping your gas. There's only two states in the union that don't do it, Oregon and New Jersey. Do you want that? You know, I got to tell you, friends, I always voted against it. It was in front of us in the legislature several times when I served from 1999 through January of 2007. And I always voted against it. And I did it because my mother and my wife said, you will vote against it. We don't want to get out of our car on a rainy day like today, folks, with the rain blowing and just coming at us sideways. They don't want to get out and pump their own gas. That's why I always voted no. But, you know, if we did, would it be the end of the world? All interesting stuff that is going to come into play. And I predict to you again that they're going to make a run. The legislature, when they come into special session, Kate's going to be demanding you give up your money. But she won't be demanding that the SEIU or AFSCME or the OEA give up 3 months of their union dues collection, because you know they have lots of money because they keep pumping it into these Democrat campaigns. They've pumped about $90 million, the unions have, so far, in trying to recall State Senator Chuck Thompson from Hood River, a Republican who walked out, saving you and your family a lot of money and a lot of grief. They've got plenty of money to put into that, so maybe they can just give up 3 months of their dues. We'll talk with Jason Dudash of the Freedom Foundation at the bottom of the hour. So, there was a great, I want to get into this because I think it's an important story. There is a great, let me try to do this here. All right, why isn't that working? There is a, I hate it when that doesn't work. At any rate, Oregon Catalyst has a great piece today. They've got two pieces. One that's talking about the upcoming PERS crisis. Going to have a $30 billion shortfall because of the declining stock market. Now, even though the market has come back up, at its worst, we were down about 35%. It's up, maybe we're only down about 28% now. The article here in the Oregon Catalyst is saying that our shortfall, the amount of money, if we were to liquidate the system tomorrow, if you had to, okay, state goes bankrupt, and you have to liquidate PERS to pay your obligations, that it would be $30 billion. Today, currently, it's $24.5 billion. If we liquidated everything, we wouldn't have enough. It would be at least $30 billion that were upside down. Okay? Now, that's assuming that we get 7.2% return. The PERS fund gets 7.2% per year to keep it from getting any bigger. Well, and there's an interesting chart there having to do with that. The problem is, if it's only 20, if we finish the year dead even, right now we're down 28%. This article says we're down 20%, which is really more than that. 20% equals $30 billion instead of the 24.5. But let's assume that everything recovers, and it may to some extent by the end of the year. Even if the market is unchanged, the PERS unfunded liabilities is still going to go up another $3 billion. It'll be up to $27 billion. So for a $60,000 a year employee working for a state government, or maybe working for any city or county government, 60 grand. It's not a lot in this day and age anymore, but 60,000. That today at the current unfunded liability means an additional right now at 24.5 billion. The rate is 25% of payroll. So that's $15,000 a year your local government or your state government has to put into the PERS fund to cover all of this, including the unfunded liability for a $60,000 a year employee. So if it goes up to $27 billion, it's $18,000. If it goes to $30, it's over $21,000. Interesting article that I'll have on the show plan today. By the way, I'm almost up to date on all the podcasting, but it is on Oregon Catalyst. It's an article written by Eric Fruits, PhD economist. Now, the other one is what I started the show with. How bad is it in Oregon? On the Oregon Catalyst, there's a story called Three Coronavirus Charts, Where Oregon Stands, and what it shows clearly is that the cases of both hospitalization, the cases of infection, the cases of hospital visits due to both the flu and coronavirus, it is all diminishing. And you can see it on a two-day chart. These three charts show it all diminishing. Now, that's good news for us. We've got a little over 500 people infected. Only 13 people have died. Now, compared to New York, this is a good thing. Compared to Louisiana, compared to other states, this is a good thing. But does it mean that we can let our guard down? Does it mean that we still don't need resources? And there are lots of resources that we're not using, that we already have. So why is cake demanding more if the curve is bending downward right now and has been for a time? And you can see the chart. Back in a moment, friends. No.
Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
Stop the car. 22 minutes past the top of the hour. Great to have you with us. You know, if it is great that apparently, according to these charts from the Oregon Health Department, that coronavirus is diminishing in Oregon. That's fantastic, isn't it? But does that mean you let your guard down? I don't think so. There's a lot of things you can do to keep your immune system strong. The stronger it is, the better you're able to withstand this thing in case you get exposed to it. One of the ways you do that, of course, is lots of sleep and rest, right? Exercise is good. One of the most important things you can do, which I do now daily, is I use CBD tincture under my tongue before I go to bed at night. Now, it not just helps me sleep better, because it does. I can just tell you, the days I use it, it's great. The days I don't, it ain't so great. The reality is this, friends. CBD works for me, and it works for other people that I know. It could maybe help you. Maybe help your immune system be strong enough to withstand this thing, and frankly, the flu and everything else that comes along, colds. So why don't you check out pro-bioscience.com? They not only have CBD-infused hand sanitizers, which is kind of necessary. I went shopping last night. Do you think you can find any hand sanitizer? No. But CBD-infused hand sanitizer is available at pro-bioscience.com. It's made right here in Salem, and they use CBD oil that comes from the Salem area, to be honest with you. Check it out, pro-bioscience.com. You can use the sanitizers. You can use the CBD, like I do, from them, pro-bioscience.com. And by the way, today and tomorrow, you can get a 15% discount if you put online, when you're ordering online, the code, the discount code, 15% discount, Shamrock. Shamrock. That's the discount. Okay. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. 503-589-1220. Emails to Jeff at 1220.am. It seems to me that with coronavirus, according to the official charts put up by the state of Oregon, seem to be diminishing. Now, we have the, it's just been in the last, week and a half that it's gone down. Now, the cases of the flu, however, have gone down a little bit more rapidly. And hospital visits are going down for both, well, really for everything. But that's good. Because we are not hanging out with each other as much as we used to, it's likely and understandable. But even before this, even before Kate Brown's order and social distancing, the trend line from flu alone, again, this is according to the CDC, and I talked about this, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. The trend line was that it was decreasing, and that does stand to reason because, look, spring is coming along. The temperatures are getting better. My goodness, it's 50 degrees out there, even though it's a warm rain. All of this is good news for us. But if that's the case, do we need more of these resources? Well, according to the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, we have 283 ICU intensive care beds available in Oregon. There are 68, in addition to the adult ones, there are 68 pediatric beds available. Right now, we have 746 ventilators available. We have 117 cases of coronavirus that have, where people have been hospitalized, okay? Of those 117, according to this chart, only 31 of those patients are on ventilators. Now, again, that's good news. Because not everybody who's hospitalized for COVID-19 needs a ventilator. We have 746 ventilators available. Only 31 of them are being used right now. So here's the question. How much more do we really need? Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be prepared, because I think we should be. How much more do we need? we're using a little over a third of all the ICU beds that are available. Now, look, it still doesn't mean that they're not being used, right? Because there are other people, just because coronavirus is out there and the emphasis, you know, other people still have issues. Like when my father had when his heart crashed 3 days after having his heart valve replaced, he had to be in ICU because it was bad news. We just about lost him. So, okay, I get it. But on any given day, not all of the ICU beds of this state, both pediatric and adult, are being used. So, again, how much more capacity do we need if these charts are right? Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Brian. Brian, good morning. What say you? Hey, Brian, good morning. I can't hear him. Well, okay. I guess we don't have Brian. We can't hear Brian. Brian, thanks for calling in. At the bottom of the hour here, we're going to talk with Jason Dudash. In this time of businesses just being hammered by being shut down, how could we put more money in government employees' pockets that they could then spend with businesses? Well, one of the ideas is to suspend giving union dues, which the government automatically collects and gives to the unions, which maybe they ought to be having to do that themselves. Wonder how that would work out. Anyway, we're going to talk with Jason Dudash here at the bottom of the hour. Folks, plus your phone calls after that, 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. Emails to jeff@1220.am. Lots of interesting things. See you on the other side.
Call Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
24 minutes till the top of the hour. In just a moment, we're going to chat with Jason Dudash, is the Oregon Director of Freedom Foundation, and how the government employees could pump more money into Oregon's economy to help our struggling small businesses because they would have more money. But, you know, I guess I hit a bit of a nerve, shall we say, with the self-service gas thing, because it is now being allowed by the state fire marshal in certain cases. Corby writes, I'm against self-service gas because it would eliminate jobs, and I guarantee you it would not lower fuel prices. It would be like having a sales tax, but not eliminating state taxes. You could be right. This segment of the show, by the way, is brought to you by Diamond Royalty Rides. You know, you really can try to make your whole family and everybody else that is important to you feel special. This is not an easy time. We're all kind of like a little bit discombobulated. Our lives have been turned upside down in most cases. So, you know, one way that you can kind of get people back to feeling good about what's going on, hire a limousine. Go out and spend the day driving around beautiful Oregon. Check it out. Diamond Royalty Rides, based out of Salem, surprisingly affordable. Check out their website, diamondroyaltyrides.com. Let's go to Jason Dudash. He's the Oregon Director of Freedom Foundation. He joins us right now. Jason, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Very good. Thanks for having me.
You all hunkered down?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right. So Freedom Foundation, You have an interesting idea that could help state employees, city employees, municipal employees, any government worker that's paying union dues, how they could pump money into the economy to help our struggling businesses. What would that be?
Well, Jeff, it doesn't just help those employees, it helps the state as a whole. You know, everybody right now, Oregonians from all walks of life, are facing unprecedented economic uncertainty. And the only people really in the state that aren't having any trouble are government unions. And our idea, I penned a letter to Governor Brown last week asking her to place a moratorium on union dues deductions for 3 months, as a way to keep $29 million into Oregon's economy, into the hands of our workers in this time of crisis, exactly where it needs to be.
$29 million in 3 months? That's a lot.
It is in 3 months. Well, your average government employee pays about $800 a year in union dues. This action would keep about $200 extra in their pockets in that three-month span. If the governor wants to be generous and extend that to 6 months, we could be talking about $58 million and $400 extra in take-home pay. But that's certainly, you know, every dollar counts in times like this. And when we're all scratching our heads and small businesses are forcing to close their doors because people are trying to hang on to those extra dollars, that could be a really, really big difference.
So describe, how many unions are you talking about here?
We're talking about the largest, just mainly four in Oregon. So we've got SEIU, the state's largest, the OEA Teachers Union, AFSCME, your city, county, and municipal employees, and then OSEA, our state's school classified employee union.
So there actually are many other unions and small bargaining units in some of the smaller cities and other organizations that this would apply to, right? I mean, you're talking about it blanket all government employee unions?
All public sector unions, correct.
All public sector unions. All right, so you asked the governor, did you get a response?
Of course not. No, I don't think she's going to be a big fan of this idea. When we're talking about the only person that this would really affect being her buddies that funded her to be in office, I don't think that she's going to be too fond of the idea of taking some money away from them.
So in your press release, you say wealthy government unions, actually your CEO, Tom McCabe, says wealthy government unions can do their part by temporarily foregoing the dues deductions so people can keep more of their money, spend it in the private sector and get our economy rolling again. Okay, fair enough. But how do you determine that these unions are wealthy? So in other words, do you know how much money that the unions have sitting there in their bank accounts?
Yes, I do. Actually, exactly. Right now, those unions we just mentioned, they have about $21 million cash on hand. And that's, you know, just about the first quarter of their budget. This is something that they should be offering, really. You know, when they claim to look out for the best interests of their members and wants what's best for them in these times of economic uncertainty, this should be something they should be offering to their members as a way to help make sure that they're able to keep their families afloat. I don't see any real reason that they could be needing this money right now. What are they going to be using it for? That's what they should be justifying what they need these taxpayer dollars for in this time of crisis. After they pay their multiple dozens of employees their six-figure salaries, then they're going to be having the rest of it into partisan politics, like we just saw. Last week, the American Federation of Teachers in Oregon donated $10,000 to the partisan removal effort of Senator Chuck Thompson in the middle of this crisis. That's the best way for us to be using our taxpayer dollars right now. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's all political. There's no question about it. So they got $21 million. They could probably make it through with a 3 month suspension, right?
Oh, indefinitely. Yes.
So let me ask you this then. Can the governor do this by executive order, or does the legislature have to get involved?
Well, I believe if the governor has the ability to close our churches, to tell privately owned small businesses that they have to close doors, that she can certainly have the same authority to tell government unions to forego union deductions for 3 months.
So let's just say hypothetically that the Governor Brown saw the wisdom of doing such a thing, right? So she says, okay, we're going to suspend dues collection. Does that mean then that the unions couldn't ask their workers to give it to them anyway?
Well, I believe just like in any situation, as a private person with your private money, if you do see such a deep value in your government union that you want to go forward and donate that voluntarily after it's been just added back to your paycheck, there's no reason that people can't be allowed to do that.
Well, you know, that's the leveling of the playing field that I have always advocated for, you know, because I served 8 years in the House of Representatives and I always had to go out and raise my own money. I had to ask people to give me their hard-earned dollars. Unions don't have that. They get it automatically. It's like an ATM machine. I think that's a good thing. I think they should have to go make the case to their membership. Give us your money because we're providing value to you. I think they should.
I think that's exactly right.
So, again, let's assume that Kate does this for the sake of argument. She suspends it. What do you think the unions would do? I mean, would they sue her in court?
Time will tell. Short of having an aneurysm, I'm not sure what they would do. They would be panicking for every dollar counts for them, as all they care about is dollars. They don't care how this money would help their members and what it would do for their individual families in this time. They would be freaked out about the prospect of losing any ounce of power that they have because of the enormous amount of money that they get.
Yeah, and that's true. And what most people don't know, that I happen to know for a fact, that SEIU in years past, I don't know if they're still doing it, but in years past, they have been sending 50% of all their union dues collected in Oregon, they send it back to the national SEIU union in D.C. I know it for a fact because I've interviewed the former bookkeeper of SEIU 503, and he showed me the actual data because he had it.
Yeah, I don't believe it's quite 50%, but it is millions of dollars each year that gets sent back.
It's a lot.
That's correct. Yep.
So speaking of lawsuits, you guys are pretty good at engaging in lawsuits, and it sounds like you're going to be filing some more really soon, right?
Oh, we sure are. You know, we have a world-class team of attorneys that wakes up every day looking for reasons to sue government unions, and they're very good at it. And this is a bit of an exclusive for you and your audience. This afternoon, we will be filing two additional lawsuits against SEIU 503, both forgeries, where they were not able to convince members of the value of their membership, so they signed them up themselves and illegally deducted thousands of dollars in union dues from these people.
And what's interesting is apparently SEIU 503 is claiming that these employees authorized the deduction of union dues electronically through their website. What?
Yep, that is correct. So one of them, they're claiming that she filled out a form online. When we sent a demand letter for that information, they sent us back what's called metadata that includes an IP address that does not match any electronic device she owns. It's using an email address that's never belonged to her. Our second plaintiff, they're claiming she signed it on an iPad, again with wrongful personal information and with an IP address and a date and timestamp from Tacoma, Washington, when she can clearly show that she was not in that city on that date or time or anywhere close to that.
Tacoma, Washington. Well, there's going to be a lot more to this story as it evolves, right?
Correct. No, we this actually brings our total of three forgery cases we have in Oregon. We filed one, a physical forgery, about 2 months ago now, which SEIU just kicked to a big law firm that they like to use down in California, that shows us that they know they're in pretty hot water. Unfortunately, we recognize that this is just the tip of the iceberg with these. This is not an accident. This is a bit more of a pattern, and we're looking to hold them accountable for every single one of them.
Jason, in 10 seconds, how can people read this on your website?
freedomfoundation.com. Go ahead and go on there. All of our press releases, all of our blog posts about all of this is going to be right there.
Jason Dudash, Freedom Foundation. Check him out, folks. Thanks, Jason. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Call Jeff now at 503-589-1220. That's 503-589-1220. Let's return now to more of Political Coffee with Jeff Krupp.
Stop the car. 10 minutes till the top of the hour. Apparently, Lee doesn't like the idea of pumping gas either. He writes me an email, said, you know, I had a high school job at a service station. Now I'm a member of the Pacific Pride Card Sales Company. What's kind of funny is the short-sightedness of allowing Oregonians to pump their own gas. As I read the posted instructions, it occurred to me that Oregonians have not been taught how to pump their own fuel. The safety protocols, where and what the emergency shutoff valve is and does, you know, that kind of stuff. I wish Oregon taught how to pump gas in driver's education. In the stations had both self-serve and attended so the customer could make their choice on what to purchase. I predict that there will be a few diesel motors ordered in the next few weeks as DEF was put into their fuel tanks. Is that considered an economic stimulus? Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yikes. At any rate, I think, you know, people are smart enough to get this figured out. Thanks, Freddie, for the great picture there of his son. Appreciate that. 503-589-1220 is the Power Buick GMC talk line. 503-589-1220. Would love to get your comments on what you think is going on here. If Oregon really is lessening in terms of the numbers of actual cases of COVID-19 and hospitalizations are going down, and we have not used all of our ICU beds for, you know, this process of caring for them, how much more do we need to do? And whose role is it? You know, the story about Kate getting the declaration from Donald Trump is a good thing. But Kate still says that we need more. She's not happy with it. She needs more. Okay. So she puts out this ad campaign. Now, the Washington Times has written an article about this. Going too far, Kate Brown's grim stay-at-home, save-lives ad campaign gets slammed. And I saw this, I don't know, it was maybe Saturday, I think, on Channel 12. And it starts, it just, first of all, what I noticed about it, it's mostly about Portland. There were Portland buildings in the background, Portland Fire and Rescue, nothing about the rest of the state. Because that's obvious. Kate only cares about one side of the state. Now, okay. She is governor for all of us, right? Supposedly. Anyway, the Washington Times story says Oregon Governor Brown isn't pulling any punches with her state's newly launched coronavirus public awareness campaign promoting social distancing. In a 30-second ad, she says 1.4% of all Oregonians could die, which would be about 60,000 people in the state. According to the ad, the average person knows 600 people, which means 5 people you know could lose their lives. It's up to you, she says. How many people live or die? Don't accidentally kill anybody. And it includes the thumbnail. Did you accidentally kill somebody today? Bill Post, of course, blasted it and countered with a two-minute video post that included positive messages like, you're doing great, Oregon, and wash your hands a lot. He tweeted, this is just going too far. Just stop it. Oregonians, get it. We're doing the right thing. We don't need to be shamed. The two creators, that Wyden and Kennedy, the Portland ad company that produced the campaign, they are quoted as saying, created this campaign with the governor because we don't want to look back and wish we had done more. Shaming. I don't know. Is this even necessary? No, I'm serious. Again, look at the data. Go to Oregon Catalyst. Look at the data, folks. It's all there for you. The three coronavirus charts all show that total hospital visits are going down. That means for the flu, okay? This is good news. This is not bad. Now, tomorrow, I want to talk a little bit more. I mean, obviously, coronavirus is going to stay in the news because it's impacting us all. So, how's it impacting your life? We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. I want to kind of end the show today with a little bit of a story about how it's impacting my life. Yesterday, of course, those of us who go to church, none of us could go to church yesterday. At our church, Life Bible Church in Harrisburg, Oregon, always the first Sunday of the month is Communion Sunday. It's a tradition they have. Well, that was the first Sunday of the month, in essence, yesterday. We couldn't go to church. So in watching church online, I took communion online. No, not with fake bread or wafers or fake grape juice. I literally took a little bit of piece of bread from my refrigerator. And because I didn't have any grape juice, I poured a little bit of red wine in the bottom of a wine glass. And I took a picture of it in front of the TV as Pastor Brad Neuschwander was talking about communion and preaching about it. Because we have praise and worship that you could watch on TV. And this is happening a lot across the country. Now, hopefully, you know, as you know, the president yesterday extended at least the presidential request that we all sort of just take it easy till the end of April. I think we all knew that that was going to come. His aspiration about hoping to have churches open by, you know, Easter was just that. It was an aspiration. So this is changing lives. And it's going to be interesting to see what is the ultimate impact of doing this kind of thing, of all the changes that we're making in our lives, from work to things like going to church, taking communion online. Never in my life did I think that I would do that, but I'm glad I did. And while it's a little different, because you're not there in person, it didn't diminish the meaning for me. And I hope it did for you either. Thanks for listening today, folks. We got a lot to talk about this week because there's a lot going to happen. So stick with us, won't you? Make it a great day. Pray for the state. Pray for our leaders. See you tomorrow.